May this verse from Rumi serve as a welcome to us all as we gather here to remember dear Jonas. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, it doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan of despair. Come, even if you have broken your vow 1,000 times, come yet again, come, come. And for the bhajans today that we will begin and end this with, we're going to ask all of us to sing internally rather than with our voices for the chorus. So please feel free to sing along silently. This is Kabir's Apana Koi Nahi. No one in this world belongs to us except our dearly beloved Satguru. O man, don't be saying mine, mine. There's no guarantee of breaths. Your life is as fragile as sugar candy thrown into water. O man, don't be so full of ego. Death is on your head. One day, you fool, you may even drown without water. You are wearing dust. You dress in dust. Even your pillow is dust. One day, madman, your body will return to dust. As long as oil and wick are in the lamp, the light gets brighter and brighter. And when both are finished, the dead body is carried to the graveyard. What is the use of stitching the old clothes again and again? No one is the friend of the heart. All have selfish motives. No one in this world belongs to us except our dearly beloved Satguru.
Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara chi. Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara chi. Na kare pande meri meri daminda ki parvasa. Jeevan tera esa chesa pani vichipta sa. Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara ji. Na kare pande kurit ka par sir pe motin mani. Ek din pagle es aaye tutu pe pin pani. Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara ji. Mati odna, mati pahenna, mati ka sirhana ji. Ek din pagle es aaye, mati me mil jana ji. Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara ji. Jab tak tela deep me paati, jagmag ho rahi. Jal kai tela ne kut kai paati, lasi vi anko to lahi. Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara ji. Pata chola hua purana khab lag si ve dar ji. Dil ka mehram koi na milia sab matlab ke kar ji. Apena koi nahi inheichi ki apena Satguru pyara ji. Apena koi nahi inheichi. ji ki apna satguru pyara ji.
No one in this world belongs to us except our dearly beloved Satguru. As we honor the querida alma, the dear soul who manifested in our lives as Jonas Gerard, let us keep in mind these words from Master Kirpal Singh. Death is not what it seems to be and what it is taken for in common parlance. Death and life are correlative terms on the earth plane only, but in reality there's no difference between the two, for death cannot swallow life, nor can death put an end to life. It is an interchangeable process, as two sides of a coin rotating on its axis. Do we not see day and night, light and darkness, alternately coming and going? Death does not mean total extinction or annihilation. It is nothing but the change of consciousness from one place of existence to another place of existence, and death cannot extinguish the eternal flame of life. Jonas often seemed bigger than life, which no doubt came from the size of his heart, which was huge. Karen and I met Jonas and Judith when we hitchhiked to Florida in search of truth in the spring of 1968. We rented an apartment next to them, with Jim Cluett on the other side. They asked Karen to attend Mira's birth as a photographer. Then the family came north in 1970 to help build the satsang hall, and again in the mid-1970s, so Mira could attend Sant Bani School. Jonas and I often conversed in Spanish, which we both loved. I recall visiting with him in Miami long ago, and I mentioned that I was going to see a Frida Kahlo exhibit at an art museum, and he asked me if he could come too. His joy at the exhibit was infectious, not only because he was so excited to see Frida Kahlo's work in person, but because he was so excited that I was there and loving it too along with him. Jonas used his own life force to capture and share the life in others. My mother asked him to create a portrait of my father, showing the many sides of his love for playing and teaching tennis. Jonas did, and when the large canvas was unveiled at a celebration for my father, it was clear that both my mom and my dad was actually pretty humble, but they both loved it. My father unexpectedly died soon after, but that painting brought great joy and comfort to my mom for the rest of her life. I have a small reproduction in our home, and it does the same for me. Truly, the huge heart and skilled hands of Jonas could capture the life force of others in such a way that their essence continues to radiate, and that is amazing. So Mira is going to share with us, and then others will be welcome.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here to honor Papa's life. And I also want to say that for every one of you, there would probably be 100 more if we weren't in a pandemic. And there will be, as yet to be announced, chance for other people to share memories of Papa in some kind of a virtual event. So keep your eye out for that. We will be maybe adding the recording of this to that, or I don't know yet, but this will be recorded. It's been very difficult for me to find words to express the complex feelings I have for Papa, especially in the wake of what was a painful struggle for him. It's okay if I take it off. It's okay if I far enough away to do this. Like Kent just said, Jonas always seemed bigger than life. That was true for me as his daughter. These last few months have been very hard for him and for me, seeing someone of such magnitude become rapidly weaker, all while still making some of the very best work of his entire life, until he became too weak to stand up for more than a few minutes. My earliest memory is of jumping off a high van roof into Papa's arms. It probably felt higher than it was in real life, but there are many stories of me doing things like this. I remember running to him in airports when he came to pick me up after we left the ashram, after the divorce, and just leaping, hurling myself into his arms, which probably almost knocked him over because I was 11. Life with Papa was exuberant, and loving Papa could be difficult. He drove a hard bargain. As a teenager, I jokingly referred to him sometimes as Hurricane Jonas, imagining him as the eye of a hurricane. And anyone near him kind of had to be in the vortex, in the wind, whirling, orbiting around him. To me, maybe a more fitting metaphor now might be that of an orchestra director. But in both cases, that's really intense. As Papa's daughter, I often felt he wanted to direct me, but we ultimately negotiated a different dance, one in which he honored and celebrated the life path I chose, bragging about me to excess to anyone who would listen. When he needed to get out of Florida, I convinced him to come live near me in Asheville, which is a city he fell in love with. We were so grateful to be able to live near each other and love each other all those years with our separate but related creative lives and livelihoods. He always wanted me to join him in the business of making and selling art, but with the exception of about 8 months in Florida when I worked for him in the late 90s, I opted to live an artist's life that didn't require the sale of paintings to earn my keep. And through my years as an art student, finally getting my MFA, then coming to New Hampshire and teaching here at Sainte Bonnie School for a time, I discovered my love of teaching and found that to be a beautiful and rewarding way to earn my living and keep painting. Loving Papa meant leaping, always. I've contemplated this a lot. By the way, this is 2.5 pages long, but oh well. It's good that it's not 10, that's all. I have contemplated this a lot recently because I became afraid of heights as I grew older, unlike when I leapt into Papa's waiting arms. I've had many dreams of falling, on being close to edges of things. Sometimes I feel like my life is spent close to or camping out nearby some dangerous edges. The idea of leaping emerged again recently in my life after contemplating a fantasy illustration by a young Canadian artist of a woman leaping off a high rock. And soon after, scrolling Instagram on my phone, I was completely enchanted by an image of breaching whales that reminded me of the exact same image of the woman jumping. After that, a few days after, I did a little painting of the whales breaching, and I added a woman on a boat sitting floating watching nearby. A couple of days after that, I was at Papa's place and he was asking for his whale pillow. This small pillow, turns out, was his favorite and it had a whale on it. Of course, all those connections mean a lot to me. He had learned that pillows for children's bedrooms were often just right for his lower back, which had a lot of pain in the end from not being able to walk anymore. I haven't had the chance to metabolize the symbolic significance of all of this, including, of course, the story of Jonah and the whale, because Jonah sounds like Jonas, which we also illustrated here at Sainte Bonnie with relief prints under Mildred Mee's guidance. Papa even has a book on his shelf called The Book of Jonas, and I have no idea what that's about or how it relates, but I know I will read it soon. There is more, lots more little stories I can share with you, like when he was worried I might get HIV in the 80s during the AIDS epidemic, and he would say, "If you die, I die." Or how we would always sign our cards with things like, "I love you madly," or "all love." Or how he would spontaneously dance on a street corner if a musician was playing, and if I was there, he would dance with me. How, after he died, a woman who came to his reception in Asheville told me about him just taking a wad of cash out of his wallet to pay her rent, because he was always high-rolling with a bunch of cash in his wallet. That's just the kind of person he was. Or how he literally cleared the decks when I'd come visit. His infectious support, rabid enthusiasm for any and everything people might do or say, and just his presence with people was just staggering. I could tell stories for hours, but I'll just tell a couple more. When Mama and Papa got divorced, I was heartbroken. I was also on the edge of puberty, another ledge, another abyss nearby. And Papa gave me a necklace with a pendant made from a dark carved black stone, maybe onyx, carved into a flat cloud shape and set in a silver bezel. This was to help with the pain of the divorce and all the loss it brought in my life, which included losing my childhood at the ashram, or what was left of it. And that has shaped me forever. He said, "Every black cloud has a silver lining."
This concept has emerged in my memory over the last 2 years of grief and loss, because all the good things of my life, of which there are so many, have felt sparkling, shimmering, almost blindingly bright silver linings against some very dark clouds. But the clouds themselves are luminous in their shadowiness, like a person silhouetted against the sun in late afternoon, or like the halo of the sun during a solar eclipse, with the sun itself darkened just by a cast shadow, and the corona that still burns too brightly around it doesn't even allow us to look directly at it without damaging our eyes. So it just happens to be that Papa died on 9/25, which also are the numbers that are stamped into sterling silver, which is 92.5% fine silver by weight. The other day in his apartment, I felt his presence, and I thanked him out loud for the signs he had already given me after he passed. And I asked him to show me more, and I promised to recognize them. I immediately practically heard his voice telling me to look on the back of the painting in his bedroom, which is a painting he chose for his bedroom in his last few months, and I love that painting very much, and I was staring at it a lot. I went in and turned it around and saw the title, A Sea Change, like S-E-A, unlike C. It comes from the sea change in music, but it was changed to S-E-A. And that immediately brought back the memory of me giving him the title for it in a conversation that we had. He was having a breakthrough around that time where he was making ever more fluid, movement-based acrylic paintings that catapulted him really towards, in his last decade, into real international renown. Not that he hadn't had it before that, but that really, those paintings were profound, and he just kept perfecting and editing them until they were just minimal amounts of paint or minimal amounts of time, very free gestures. The painting in question looks like a churning ocean with what could be a sailboat tossed in the waves or what could be a whale breaching through the surface in total exuberance. I don't know. It is bright and lush with blues and golds and reds and pinks, not a stormy sea at all, a happy sea. The concept that he always loved, that he embraced, was transformation, fearlessness, and breakthrough, a sea change. And this was a favorite theme of his throughout everything. I remembered in that moment vividly our conversation which led to the title, so I exclaimed it out loud to him in that room, "Thank you for the sign, Papa," at which point I noticed a little tiny sticker just above the title, and the sticker was a price tag. The price tag was $9,250, 9250. So there it is again, 925 sterling silver, the day of his leaving this world. Papa taught me how to paint stars, cosmos, and especially how to paint exuberantly. Only in the recent 12 years or so have I really taken that to heart, kind of coinciding with the time that he moved to Asheville and was close by enough for us to paint together sometimes. His life force literally feels like an electric current inside me now. When I was a little girl, we had a modified Kirpal Singh quote for when I left for school up the hill at St. Bonnie when it was just the little schoolhouse. Instead of be good, do good, be one, it was be good, do good, and wave out the window. I didn't like goodbyes very much, so I would walk to school and turn around, and always Mama and or Papa, whoever was there, would wave out the window, and I would check. I would just keep walking up the hill and turning around and check. They're still there. I've known a few children over the years, and I recognize well the pain and longing of every even tiny goodbye. So how do I reconcile this one? When I was little, I used to always say I wanted to live with my parents forever. They always said, no, you won't. I was like, no, I will, forever. I don't ever want to move out. Once on a plane to India to see Sanchi, our first time to see him in India, and I think it was 77 or 78 after he had come here, the plane was undergoing a lot of turbulence, and I was really scared that maybe it would crash, but then I realized if it crashed, we would all die together. And I said, I hope it crashes, because I really could only imagine my whole world was my mom and dad. Of course, lots of other people would have been sad too, but I said, well, that if it crashes, nobody will miss each other, because we'll die at the same time. But to me, Mama and Papa were my everything, and when I was younger, I thought the world might fall out under me when I lost them. I don't feel that way anymore, but I wish I had known how much this would hurt. This drum, which he kept in his bedroom and which he cherished very much, is still a mystery. Maybe one of you can solve it. If any of you know the story of this drum, please tell me. What I know for sure is he cherished it, and he made sure that it was in his bedroom, and he carried it when he moved from his last apartment to his very last apartment, and he made sure it was where he could see it on a shelf. And everybody I've asked said, oh yes, that was very important to him. I have a memory of him talking to me about it and stroking the drum, but I just don't know. I have a feeling he might have gotten it in Morocco on his last trip there. So it occurred to me that I didn't want to use anything that was anything less than sacred for his ashes. I couldn't just go find a fancy urn. You know, I went into his room and saw this, and that's where his ashes are. And I hope he will be carried gently into the belly of the in the belly of the drum, like Jonah was protected in the belly of the whale, or like some ancient Egyptian king on his journey into the arms of the infinite, maybe playing the drum a little, maybe waving at me while I'm walking on that path away from him up the snowy hill and waving back. I'm going to miss you fiercely, Papa, and I promise to make every day as full and rich and vivid as I can muster, because you gave me that.
A lot of y'all don't know me. 11 years ago, some artist hired me to go to work for him. And it turned out to be one of the most profound friendships I ever had. A couple of weeks ago, Jonas said, sometimes people think you're like a son to me. He said, but a lot of times I think you're like a dad to me. It's been a hard trip. He's at peace. And I think it's so fitting that we're here today among vivid fall colors for somebody who was known for his colors. A few days ago, one of the folks from up here said to me, it's going to rain, it's going to be cold. And I thought, no hell, not on Jonas's funeral, he won't allow it. So many names that I've heard or saw on the list for today are so recognizable to me, because I heard so many great stories of Tibor and I, or Russell and I, or Fletcher, and I think Christine's here. I've heard some Christine stories. I've heard stories about so many, but he was so much bigger than life. And he was one of the people that was so uniquely able to present his love in categories. He could love everybody. You know, people say you can't love more than one. He could. I always thought that when someone passed away, just kind of falling over and being gone was the way to do it. But through Jonas's illness, I realized he was able to say the things to Mira that he wanted to say to her. And she was able to say the things to him. And he and I had communications and other friends that were local and close by. And we called Russell up on the phone, and we called T up on the phone, And he got to take care of all of his business at the end. And as we're here in the fall in New Hampshire and the colors are fading, Jonas's colors have faded too. But the joy that his art gave is going to live on. In the 11 years I worked for him in some capacity or another, I can never remember anyone who needed help or any organization that needed help that he didn't just say, well, how can we do this? There's a need. He would come to me a couple years ago. He came to me and said, there's a need in the community, and this is what it is. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, I want to help with this. And I said, great, because, you know, I was the PR guy. And he said, no. This is between me and God. You go to these people and you talk to them and tell them this is private. They may not publish it. He wasn't perfect. He certainly had some regrets. But if there's anybody in the world that tried to overcome their imperfection through love, joy, gifts and helping humanity, then I would put forth that it was Jonas Gerard. That's it.
Every painting and every sound you make is a self-portrait. Jonas wrote these words to our daughter Irene after her visit to Asheville. He had encouraged her in her art and given her access to precious and plentiful paints. He went on to write, "It takes courage to be true to yourself. You have taken charge of your life. Welcome. But be certain the law never fails. What you think about, you bring about. You are now in a supportive atmosphere. Make the best of it. You are divinely protected." Each of our four daughters was touched by a different facet of the wise, joyful, intuitive, and kind Jonas. Faith remembers his tissue paper art blocks teaching her to rip away and be bold with color. He gleefully would poke a brush in green paint and stab at the canvas to make a tree appear. She figured it was worth a try, and suddenly she could create a forest. Mary marveled to return from her honeymoon in Cuba in 2005 to find on her doorstep a large painting of a Cuban street scene. Jonas had not attended her West Coast wedding. He didn't know she and Scott had gone to Cuba. The painting moved with them to Berkeley. Its rusty tones and Jonas's favorite oranges reminding me of our setting here today. Jonas gave the 9-year-old Catherine the awesome responsibility of handing out programs at his wedding in the satsang hall. She was tickled to take on the task, wearing a special dress for the occasion, and even more delighted that Jonas took time to thank her and praise her for her poise and her sweet smile as she greeted each guest. Acts both large and small remind me of how Jonas lived Master Kapal's response to a question he asked in 1972. Here in the satsang hall, Jonas asked how, at such a young age, could he focus on the mystery of death that is so key to understanding the spiritual tradition. Master replied, "Man is not man if he does not live for others. He has to prove himself by being of use to others. He should work hard in that limited time which comes to us so that we are more use to others." May we, like Jonas, all work hard to prove ourselves and remember that every sound we make, every act is a self-portrait. What we think about, we bring about. We too are divinely protected. And this portrait here is called In His Mist. And I think that's an appropriate painting for today.
When Jonas lived here and did his painting in the studio there, I used to drop in and visit with him. It never distracted him. He could paint up a storm and still have a lovely conversation with you. So I enjoyed watching him at his work. And one day he was doing abstracts. And I had always been mystified by abstract painting. How do you know what you're going to do? I mean, how do you know what to do? And where are you going? What's this all? How do you do this? He said, "Try it yourself." And so he brought out a canvas, dropped it on the table, handed me a brush, said, "Go, try it." I said, and of course, I said, "I don't know how to do this. I never done anything like this before. I don't know what would I do." "Don't worry about it. Just do it. Let it come out of you. It'll come out. It'll be fine. Don't worry. Just do it." Well, this went back and forth for a little while, but he outlasted me. And well, I grabbed a brush and I splopped some paint on the canvas and mushed it around and took one of those paint knives and did a swish and a little chick, chick, chick. And I stepped back and I said, huh, I like this. Jonas made me happy. And I really loved him, and I still do.
I'm going to talk about Jonas's courage, so how it was inspiring to me, so I might as well do this in public. So Jonas had qualities in his life that I found inspiring and I wanted to emulate. As everybody has said, he was courageous in his art and his life. He could be unsparingly honest about his own condition, but I found him empathetic and always available and genuine with friends. And we all know he was instinctively and essentially generous. His generosity flowed over. It was never calculated, whether it's with time or with money. I wondered about that many times, how he was able to just pass on things. And he struggled in his life, as we all do, but the qualities of courage and sincerity and generosity kept his heart close to the master. And I think maybe that's why Jonas made Sanchi laugh.
I first saw Jonas at an art show in Miami. And from the minute I saw him, there was something irresistible to me. Such an energy, such magnetism, so much positivity at that time. And we got together. The first people that I met through Jonas were Ann and Larry. They came to Florida, and I fell in love with them the minute that I saw them. We were all so young. Ann had her little chipmunk cheeks. There were two little boys. My daughter and them became best friends immediately. They were family within minutes. I have such vivid memories of meeting them that first time. The first time Jonas brought me up here. On the way, we stopped at Jim and Lala Howard's house. Jim and Jonas were initiated together long, long, long time ago. I fell in love with them. They became lifelong friends, more like family. And then when we continued our trip and came here, we stayed with Ann and Larry. It was home. I had never lived any place in my life for more than 2 years. And as soon as I came here, even if I didn't live here, we were living in Miami, it was home. Everyone that I met, I loved deeply. We'd go back to Miami, and I would just wait and wait until we could come back here. We spent summers on Squam. Mira was with us. Mira came to live with us. What grade? I don't know.
Ninth grade.
I loved her. I love her. She's the greatest gift from having been with Jonas. By coincidence, I had planned to be in New Hampshire this weekend, my birthday weekend, with my daughter and my son-in-law and my two grandchildren. We stayed on the lake. And driving here today, I passed by Squam Lake, where we spent summers, Lake Wakiwan. So many memories. All of it made mine because of having met this man. And most importantly, this ashram, the whole understanding, even if not always put into practice, but this path that I absolutely love and I am so grateful for. So grateful that I was finally able to come and live on Osgood Road for 20 years. To become such good friends with Judith, with whom I share a birthday. There's so much that goes on in life that is like, we don't know why, but it's meant to be. And within all that, I have to honestly say, it was not a good marriage. It was a very difficult marriage. He was a very difficult person to be married to. And all of that pushed me to become a more mature woman. And I'm also grateful for that. It was like the irritant, you know, that I either could grow or not grow. And there was a lot of growth that was required of me. And I'm so grateful. Thank you.
This is such a sweet gathering. This is family. And when I think of Jonas, I think of Mira. I think of our move, November 1st, from California. I had stories of summer and sun and warmth, and Mira had her Florida stories of summer and sun and warmth. And Jonas's and house, Jonas and Judith and Mira, the house was, it was a reflection of that. It was bright and it was bold. And I was always shy, and it was like stepping into a completely different world, that house. But Mira and I went in and out of each other's houses for as long as we were both there. And Jonas and I share the same birthday, so we're birthday twins. And we would always say on our birthday, it's, you know, it's our birthday. It's not my birthday. It's not your birthday. It's our birthday. And he always remembered. And I was always surprised that he would somehow remember that it was our birthday. And lastly, over the years, something that was surprising to me when my son was born very early, and I would send an email every day to family and then Susan Shannon just to let the ashram community know that we were doing okay. And Jonas got on that list, and it surprised me that somebody, not necessarily from my past, but not somebody that I had really communicated with as an adult too much, would want to know. But he did, and every time he saw Salim, he was so sweet. This is your miracle boy. And I would say, yes, he is. And I don't know that Salim now, as a teenager, will remember just the sweetness with which Jonas approached Salim and would just look at him with that twinkle in his eye and just grin and know. Having known the backstory, it was very sweet. And Mira, I am so sorry that that exuberance and that life force and that boldness is no longer expressing itself right here. I am so sorry, and I love you.
I love Jonas. Reference to the twinkle in the eye
reminds me of the early days with Jonas. Kent mentioned how Jonas and his family came up in 1970 when the Satsang Hall was being built. And one of the things that I remember from that year was Jonas and I working together on the entryway, the pathway to the hall, laying the stones. And the reason why that stood out to me so much was not just that it was fun to work with Jonas, but I was 9 years old and Jonas made me feel like I was really helping. It was like he made it feel like it was a team effort. And that was so important to me as a kid. I just loved to feel like I was actually helping. And Jonas, he could see that and he just approached it like we were a team. And I still remember that to this day. And a few years later, I also enjoyed watching Jonas paint down at the studio. And it just seemed like magic to me. I just could not believe that a human being could do what he was doing on the canvas. I had never seen anything like it. I don't think I've ever have still seen anything quite like it. And Jonas made it so fun because he would be just delighted to show a small audience how he would do his work, and with such exuberance. I remember watching him paint the set for The Wizard of Oz, 1978, and he would say, "Okay, what do you think? Should we put a tree here?" And he would just slap some paint on, and then how about some leaves here? And we'd watch him. He was so fast, but yet would slow down for detail around the leaves, and just make it look perfect. The last thing I wanted to share was that Kent mentioned speaking Spanish with Jonas. Well, when I was in high school here at the Sant Boni School, I studied French, and my friend Steve Rucker and I liked to practice our French with Jonas because he was so fun to chat with and had such a great enthusiasm for it. And I've told Mira about this, but one of the things I remember from those interactions was that Jonas taught us a French tongue twister that I remember to this day. And it's actually a tongue twister that's quite appropriate for vegetarians. And I'm just going to recite it here because I really think that Jonas might get a chuckle knowing that I still remember this tongue twister from round about 1978. Here it is. Un pêcheur qui se dépêchait de faire un pêcheur un pêcheur le pêcheur l'empêchait de faire un pêche pêchon. And it means a fisherman who hurries to commit a sin under a peach tree, the peach tree prevents him from committing the sin while fishing. Thank you.
I don't have really specific memories of Jonas. I mean, I do have them, but the thing that always stood out the most about Jonas with me was his energy, his incredible life force, and as everyone's been pointing out, his incredible gift, graciousness, and his incredible heart. I moved here, and we moved here, Diane and I, in 1976, and one of the first people we met right away was Jonas and Judith and Mira. And Jonas immediately, not long after that, hired me to be his business manager. And that right away shows you how gracious he was, because I'm not sure that I would be a good business manager, but he did hire me and I became his business manager. And I spent a lot of time in the studio in 1976 and after that, and saw these paintings begin to come out of him, and his, and these incredible paintings of Kripal and stuff. And then in 1976, November of 76, he went to India to see Sanchi, and he came back and was telling all about that, and got us very excited about that. But also then the paintings of Sanchi started coming out, and watching all of that. And then going down, flying down to Florida many times with him, down to his gallery in Fort Lauderdale. And he would tell me a lot about his childhood and growing up and background and everything. And it was just sort of that Greek ethnicity that I had and his ethnicity. And I mean, down in Florida, we were just crazy and wild. It was amazing with him. So he was very, very... And I think over the years, that one thing Diane and I always keep coming back to is incredible heart and the amount of giving that this man gave. None of us are perfect, but his heart, to me, was incredible, and his spirit. What I would like to do is just read a few paragraphs, just a few paragraphs, of his trip to India in the 76 when he came back. Okay. The talk is called The Caravan of Love, and he says, well, this trip was quite a trip. It was a very special trip. As you all know, my wife and I, Dick, Gerald, and Debbie, went from here. There was a total of 10 of us. On the way there, it occurred to me very strongly how blessed I was that I was not given any doubt from the very beginning about Sanchi. And it was really very much a blessing, because I didn't go there to find out if he was what he was supposed to be or anything like that. From the very beginning, I knew intuitively, the same way I knew about Master when I first looked at his picture. And as we got closer and closer to the ashram, it became very, very, very strong, extremely strong. We met Sanchi unexpectedly after we got into the ashram and unloaded our gear. He just appeared in the guest room in the quarters where we slept for a very brief moment. And it was so, so sweet. It was very brief, but he said, you just rest, and we'll see you later. And it was just a quick little taste of what was coming, what we had for 10 days. It is really difficult to explain in words what happened there. A short time after we got ourselves settled, we went up to see him in his room. And that was the most important part of our stay, up in his room, having his darshan. We sat on the floor. He gave us some beautiful handmade cushions to sit on to make ourselves comfortable. As we sat, I looked at him, and as soon as he turned around and looked at me, I said to myself, oh, Master, it is so sweet to see you again. I felt that very strongly in my heart, very, very strongly. It was so nice to see Master again. It's been a long time. And I'm sure that wherever he is right now, he is having that same feeling. It is so good to see you again, Master. And it's been far too long. This world, I think of this world a lot of times as a room. And the impression and the impact that Jonas made on me, it feels to me that the room has gotten incredibly, incredibly empty without him. Thank you.
The other day I saw a posting on Instagram from Mira. She was looking for comfort and she opened a book, and it happened to be Great Swedish Fairy Tale. And she found this passage, so she copied it out. It's from a fairy tale called Dag and Daga, who are brother and sister, and the flying troll of Sky Mountain. Daga has gone looking for her brother. She walked through great forests and over high mountains and was often so tired that her legs collapsed under her. Then she would rest a while and trudge on. She spent many nights on beds of moss under sheltering fir trees and was terrified the wild animals would come and eat her up, but they never did. And do you know why? Because Daga was never as alone as she thought she was. if she looked really carefully behind her, she would have seen someone following. It was a very tiny old man with a wrinkled face who had followed her when she left the cottage in the woods. He was the tomte of their little cottage, as you may have guessed. And when she fell asleep on the forest floor, he kept watch beside her. If a wolf or any wild beast approached, he stared at it hard until it ran away. And reading that passage, I was reminded of this extraordinary accounting from Master Kripal Singh that is from the talk Protector and Protection. One can be so much within the Guru's radiation that even the powerful Lord of Death cannot come near. For example, I will tell you of one incident when I was living in Lahore. There was a lady who hailed from my village, but she was not a disciple. She became seriously ill, and her family endured constant sleepless nights in looking after her. I heard that she was sick, and I went to see her, accompanied by Dilip Singh, who became the treasurer at the ashram, at Sawan Ashram in India. I told the family, "You have spent so many nights awake, and you must be tired. So you all sleep tonight, and I will watch beside the bed." Dilip Singh and I sat together for some time. This woman was not initiated, but that did not matter. And I asked her, "Do you repeat any holy name?" She affirmed that she did. I told Dilip Singh to go and rest and to return about 4 in the morning. And I continued to sit beside the dying woman. She went on repeating the holy names as I had suggested, but suddenly she said to me, "There is an old man here." I looked up and saw the old man, and he explained to me that she was his granddaughter and that he had come to take her away. But I told him that he could not do so as long as I was sitting there. He tried his best to take her soul out of the body, but he did not succeed. So after some moments, he went away. I asked the woman if she had recognized the old man, and she said, "Yes, it was my grandfather, and he was a very pious man." After some time, Yama, the angel of death, appeared in the doorway. I looked straight at him, and he ran away. He could not even enter the room. He returned several times, but he could not enter. Then Dharamraj, the lord of death himself, appeared, but he also could not come into the room. He said, "This soul belongs to me." And I said, "Yes, that is true, for she has not been initiated. And I know also that you cannot come near her because I am sitting here. So you had better go to my guru and ask him what is to be done now. If he gives you permission to take this soul, then I will leave." My friends, just see how great is the Naam. Dharam Rai left and in a matter of moments returned and said, "I have got the permission to take this soul." And I said, "All right, take it." Dharam Raj replied, "How can I when you are still sitting there? Whatever is written regarding the protection power of the holy Naam, it is all true, for I am telling you what actually happened. Dharam Raj said, 'Unless you leave, I cannot take this soul.' I asked him, 'What benefit will she get from spending the whole night beside her, from my spending the whole night beside her?' He said, 'She will receive the fruit of that before any other rewards or debts are accounted.' Just then, Dilip Singh came back and entered the room, and I said to him, 'Come, brother, let us go away from this room, for while I am here, she cannot die.' As we were leaving, I asked her husband to give away in her name some money, which was still due from her, to some needy people, that her give and take may be squared up, and that she may leave the body. Dilip Singh and I stepped out of the room, and in one moment, she was gone." After the final bhajan, Meera will place the urn here in the ground, and anyone who would like to, on their way out, place a handful of dirt, will be welcome to do that. The final bhajan is Santa Jeb Singh's Kripal Yahi Sandesh Deta. Kirpal gave only this message, and even the wind also teaches us this. If you keep walking while doing the Simran, the destination comes to you by itself. The fort of deceit will be destroyed in this world because walls of sand do not last. There are so many sins with you, you're a great sinner. Hail the power of Almighty Kirpal, who carries all the burden. No one is an enemy. No one belongs to anyone else. Everyone is your very own. For as the Gurbani teaches, all this world was created from one light. O Guru Kirpal, the negative power trembles, and death also is nervous in front of whomever has caught hold of your finger. Ajab says, apologize to Kirpal if your soul wants happiness. Kirpal gave only this message, and even the wind also teaches us this. If you keep walking while doing the Simran, the destination comes to you by itself.
Kirpal yahi sandesh deta, av yahi siklati hai, Simran karte chale chalo do, manjil kur mil jati hai. Kirpal yahi sandesh deta, av yahi siklati hai, Simran karte chale chalo do, manjil kur mil jati hai. Chala fareb ke khile ik din, duniya mein de jate hai. Reto ki diver tera tak, kabhi nahi tik paati hai. Kirpal yahi sandesh deta, av yahi siklati hai, Simran karte chale chalo do, manjil kur mil jati hai. Itane sare paap saat mein, itane sare paapi hai, Kirpal takta teri jai ho, sab kabara utati hai. Kirpal yahi sandesh deta, av yahi siklati hai, Simran karte chale chalo do, manjil kur mil jati hai. Na koi veri nahi begana, jo bhi hai sab apna hai. Ek noor se sab jab uchyo, gurbani patlati hai. Kirpal yahi sandesh deta, av yahi siklati hai, Simran karte chale chalo do, manjil kur mil jati hai. Guru Kirpal tumari ungali, tam rakhi hai jisne bhi, uske aaga kal ka patta, aur maut khabrati hai. Ajaib kirpal to mangala maapi, je jindari sik chaati hai. Simran karte chale chalo do, manjil kur mil jati hai. Kirapaliyahi sandeshadeta Havayahi sikalati hai Simran karate chale chaloto Manjila kuramila chati.
Kirpal gave only this message, and even the wind also teaches us this. If you keep walking while doing the Simran, the destination comes to you by itself. There is a socially distancing reception that will be happening outside the big house afterwards, and we invite Mira to take the next steps with dear Jonas's form.